morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, entitled The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha, text number 32. Indovacha idam matucha vishvabhavanam papurananda haramanorisam suravidvit Shapanir Udayadhe Udhadande Upanamastudhi. Indraha Uvacha. King Indra said, Idam, this, Api, certainly, Achutya, O infallible one, Vishabhavanam, for the welfare of the universe, Vapu, transcendental form, Anandakaram, a cause of pleasure, Manadristam, in the mind and the eye, Shuravidrit, envious of your devotees, Shapanahi, by punishment, Udayadhe, with uplifted weapons, Bhujadhanai, with arms, Upapanam, possessed of, Astabihi, with eight. Translation. King Indra said, my dear Lord, your transcendental form with eight hands and weapons in each of them appears for the welfare of the entire universe, and it is very pleasing to the mind and eyes. In such a form, your lordship is always prepared to punish the demons who are envious of your devotees. Please repeat. King Indra said, my dear Lord, your transcendental form with eight hands and weapons in each of them appear for the welfare of the entire universe, and it is very pleasing to the mind and eyes. In such a form, your lordship is always prepared to punish the demons who are envious of your devotees. It is generally understood from revealed scriptures that Lord Vishnu appears with four hands, but in this particular sacrificial arena, Lord Vishnu arrived with eight hands. King Indra said, even though we are accustomed to see your four-handed Vishnu form, this appearance with eight hands is as real as the four-handed form. As Lord Brahma had said, to realize the transcendental form of the Lord is beyond the power of the senses. In reply to that statement by Brahma, King Indra said that even though the transcendental form of the Lord is not perceivable by the material senses, his activities and his transcendental form can be understood. The Lord's uncommon features, uncommon activities, and uncommon beauty can be perceived even by an ordinary man. For example, when Lord Krishna appeared just like a 6 or 7 year old boy in Vrindavan, he was approached by the residents there. There were torrents of rain, and the Lord saved the residents of Vrindavan by lifting Govardhan Hill and resting it on the little finger of his left hand for 7 days. This uncommon feature of the Lord should convince even materialistic persons who want to speculate to the limit of their material senses. The activities of the Lord are so pleasing to experimental vision also. But impersonalists will not believe in his identity because they study the personality of the Lord by comparing their personality to his. Because men in this material world cannot lift a hill, they do not believe that the Lord can lift one. They accept the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam to be allegorical, and they try to interpret them in their own way. But factually, the Lord lifted the hill in the presence of all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, as corroborated by great acharyas and authors like Vyasadeva and Narada. Everything about the Lord, his activities, pastimes and uncommon features should be accepted as is. And in this way, even in our present condition, we can understand the Lord. In the instance herein, King Indra confirmed, your presence with eight hands is as good as your presence with four hands. There is no doubt about it. And the purport. Translation again. King Indra said, my dear Lord, your transcendental form with eight hands and weapons in each of them appears for the welfare of the entire universe, and it is very pleasing to the mind and eyes. In such a form, your Lordship is always prepared to punish the demons who are envious of your devotees. Here we have a description of the personality of Godhead. He's appearing before the exalted personalities way back in Satyuga. And he's appeared here with eight arms very quickly. As soon as they offered the oblations into the fire, then the Lord descended so everyone could see him. Usually he comes in four hands, as is mentioned. You know, Narayana has four hands. Here he's at eight arms, like Lord Nrsingadev. He says, in this form you are always prepared to punish the demons who are envious of your devotees, because he had more arms, he had more weapons. But the form is very charming and attractive to the all those present. But for the demons, those who are antagonistic towards the devotees, then the Lord appears very ferocious, and he's ready to use those weapons to protect his devotees. The Lord can appear however he likes. He appeared as a giant fish or turtle, a boar, the animals. Very surprising. But if we understand the purpose that the Lord appears, then those are very suitable forms. When there's a flood, the best thing to be is a fish, right? You have no problem, you're happy. The bigger the flood, the more happy you are. So there was the annihilation was going on. When you want to pick something from a dirty place, then the best thing is a pig. They go around and just by their sense of taste or smell, they can go along the drain with their nose under the, and then they find something to eat. Expert. And the tortoise was to, the Lord had an itchy back. He had to support a mountain. The demons and the devas, he couldn't hold it, support it. So he peeled it, and it was in the ocean. So he appeared as that amphibious turtle, giant turtle. Kashyap. So you see, ideal. Everything is perfect intelligence. If it was our program, we would have had a different plan, right? If we were God, right, we'd have our own program how to do these things. But this is how God does it. We cannot question. It may seem remarkable, but how would you do it if you had the option? You probably wouldn't do it like that. You probably wouldn't appear in those particular forms. Why would you bother to change forms even? He comes eight arms or four arms is the same person. Especially here, the significance of the eight arms is that you're ready to protect your devotees, and by annihilating the antagonistic persons, we are your devotees, you're our protector, we're taking shelter of you, then please let our endeavors be successful. So it's very remarkable, the Lord, because he's a person, then he has his own mind, and he appears and behaves exactly as he wants. So if we were to imagine a scenario and get everyone to write their, if they were God, how they would handle it, probably everyone would write something different, more or less. Everyone would have a different way of resolving the issue, more or less. Right? You can imagine. It's because we're all individual. So God is also an individual. It's only when we become proud, as Srila Prabhupada says here, because the impersonalists, or the atheists, they don't believe in the form of God, in God. Or if they do, it shouldn't be like this or like that. If I were God, I wouldn't appear as eight arms. I wouldn't appear as a tortoise. I would have done it another way. In other words, because we want to actually take the position of God. Everyone in the material world has that idea, has that desire to be the center of attention, to be worshipped, because that is God's position. He is actually center of attention. Everyone is worshipping him. He is, when he comes here, we read in the beginning of the chapter, all the greatest personalities of the universe were there. There was no question, because it was Kali, in Satyuga. Daksha was the head. He was conducting the whole sacrifices. This is for filling up the universe with progeny. It was very early on. There wasn't many living entities around at that time, visible. It was their duty to procreate, and the maintainers of the universe were there also. Indra there, Brahmas there, all these people are there. They're speaking one after another. Rishis and the... even their wives are speaking in the next verse. So everyone is there. These are the greatest people in the universe. When Lord Vishnu appeared, he says all their luster diminished. Right? When he appeared, immediately everyone recognized. Everyone came to their senses. Oh, here is the Supreme Lord. Means that pride went away. Now the pride of our ability and capabilities. And they had a lot of capabilities, these people, Indra. Everyone. But when the Lord appeared, their effulgence was diminished. They understood their actual position in the presence of the Lord. It says, in the absence of any big trees, then the mustard tree thinks he's very special. When there's no big trees around, because he's bigger than all the grass and the little weeds. The mustard tree is only that big, plant, goes like that. When there's no trees around, then he's like a king, you know, he thinks he's very important. But when there's a tree nearby, then he realizes he's... So like this, we tend to forget our situation, as the eternal servant of the Lord. So even these personalities, you see that many stories where they also forget their position, become proud of their position, become illusioned by their position because they're so powerful. And then Krishna often has to come and Krishna set things right to correct their mentality, and then they get back in line and start again. It's not only the demons, it's also the devatas. They also step out of their get out of their tram, as you say sometimes. But then he appears and puts them, everyone back in their same position. So that forgetfulness is there with us, with ordinary people, and especially with the demons, those demoniac, those are affected by the mode of ignorance, tamogun. Tamogun means more bodily identification. So then these the good qualities don't manifest. We're associating with a mode of ignorance, passion also. So then one becomes the false ego, the illusion that I am Amiyamar. It is me, it is mine. That becomes very strong. And when these kind of people group together and unite and take over the situation, as is going on nowadays in the world, then they become very proud. Might makes right, right? Who is the most smart? Who is the powerful? Then they run they call the shots in the material world. But there's fierce competition, as we see. It's not a peaceful situation because they're actually misbehaving, they're misrepresenting, they're forgetting their actual position as the eternal servants of the Lord. And so it goes so far that when one hears about a description of the Lord, no, it's not possible. Why would he? No, if I was God, I wouldn't do that. Why would he appear like that? Why wouldn't he appear? So everyone has their own opinion. This also proves that the God is a person, and he has his own mind and his own likes and dislikes, his own nature. And because of that, also the impersonalists, they say that there cannot be any spiritual variegatedness. In other words, there can't be a kingdom of God. Because the same mentality is there, that we're projecting our consciousness coming from myself, my conditioned state, that no, God couldn't be like that because I couldn't be like that. He wouldn't act like that because I wouldn't act like that. So because of the material world is troublesome and relationships are troublesome, dualities are troublesome, then obviously the spiritual world, if it's all good, all blissful, then it can't be any of these things there. So it's the same thing, same thought pattern. That here duality is troublesome, relationships are troublesome. The end in trouble anyway, generally, because there's always has to be separation. So therefore, if there is a spiritual world, because they're claiming to be religious, Mayavadis, claiming to be God, we accept there's a God, but obviously he can't have any form. As we heard the other day, if he has a form, then you're limiting. How can the absolute truth be? How can you perceive the absolute truth in one spot? Absolute truth is everything. So he can't have a form, because you're limiting the absolute truth. If you say that is a form of God, that is God, you're limiting the absolute truth. Here the absolute truth comes down in person. How is it possible? Absolute truth means everything, so then you can't limit it, so therefore obviously you can't have a form. So these are the impressions of what we're used to, that we project on God of the spiritual world. Therefore we have these disbeliefs. So this is our illusion, our foolishness, that because we're seeing everything from the egocentric view, from our own point of view, and I am the center, and everything should fit into my paradigms. We are tiny little living entities, conditioned by the four defects, so imperfect senses, tendency to cheat, make mistakes, and be illusioned. But still, we'll put forth so many arguments and debates and write books about the absolute truth and how it should be, according to my opinion. Srila Prabhupada said the philosopher, he must have his opinion must differ from other philosophers. Otherwise he won't be a philosopher. He'll just be a follower of some philosophy. So therefore, if he wants to be recognized, he has to change it. He has to change something. If he wants to be recognized as a philosopher. So therefore, and that's what people want, recognition. Who wants to be a follower? Huh? The idea is to be the center, not a follower. The idea is to be the leader. That is what is the false ego is dictating. So we're putting all of these our conditional limitations, and we're projecting them onto the spiritual world, onto God. And therefore, because Krishna acts in such extraordinary ways, then they're unbelievable for us. How can a little boy hold up a hill, balance a hill on his little finger, that one, for 7 days? Not possible. Therefore, it must be mythology. Just to discounting all the witnesses that were there, the whole of Braj was there, Lord Brahma was there, he's an eyewitness and he's speaking about it. He comes and apologizes afterwards. Vyasadeva, he has that vision, Narada Muni knows. But we'll discount their credibility also. No, it's mythology. So even though there's thousands of eyewitnesses and there's very highly learned people, very intelligent persons, up to status of demigods, up to status of the secondary controller, such powerful persons, they're affirming and confirming this happened. But we know, no, it's got to be mythology. So it's faith. The Lord will be revealed by one's pure faith, pure unalloyed faith, not otherwise. So therefore these are tests of faith. The devotee is nothing is unusual for the Lord. I mean, it's unusual, but nothing is impossible for him. He can appear as he likes. That makes him more glorious, because he does his wonderful, it makes him more glorious. Because he's a little boy and he lifts up a hill for 7 days on his little finger, that makes him more glorious. Therefore it must be mythology. Therefore the Vedas, these books were written by some very learned group of scholars who wanted to impose morality on the world. And so they devised these wonderful pastimes like Mahabharata, and maybe they threw in a few real names, historical persons, and describe all these wonderful imaginative stories so that people, the common people, would believe them and be very good people, and then we'd have peace in the society. Then we can control the people by this morality and God, etc., etc. But if that was their program, they wouldn't go to such extents. They wouldn't go to the absurd. If you wanted to convince somebody, you'd make it more more reasonable. You wouldn't go to such absurd extents as how the Lord appears and how he acts. You wouldn't write things like that. The Lord appears as a gigantic, you know, turtle or boar. Why would you do that? It's not necessary to give so many these amazing examples. You could give. You could make him a person, like a superhuman hero who does all these, you know, like you read in the modern fiction. You know, the princes and the heroes, they protect the good people and they beat all the bad people and they save the princesses and all things like that. That's our standard of, you know, the tops. They could have done it as something like that. There's not necessary to go so far as into the unbelievable for the or unperceivable in this material, things that don't happen in this world. So why would they do that? If that was their actual program, just to convince people that there was a God, then they wouldn't have gone so far. Even if they did, even if it was a fictional treatise, they wouldn't have gone so far. So Prabhupada said, one should accept the Lord as he is, and as he is presented by those who know the Lord. This is Purana, it's a history, it's a historical facts. Because they don't fit in our present day paradigm, we shouldn't dismiss them as being mythology. But even if we do, then who is that God? Who is that creator? That they don't have an answer either. They can readily dismiss the philosophy, but they don't have an answer either. Even the materialistic philosophies, atheistic philosophies, about here we have a great detail of the creation, how the creation began. Primary creation, secondary creation, how it all fits, the names of everything, how the calculation of time from the atom. This is according to them, 5,000, 3,000 to 5,000 years ago. People are supposed to be really primitive, right? This is what they're writing about. How to calculate time by the atom, by the sun movement of the sun. This is new, relatively new for the modern scientists. They're breaking, coming into this atomic theory of time. These people wrote this, according to them, three or so thousand years ago. What kind of people were they? They were supposed to be living in caves at that time, right? If we would have believed what the modern scientists say. So, but anyway, whatever they say it's not possible, they don't have an opinion. They're not united on their opinion. They have so many opinions of how creation took place. So they don't have a solid argument anyway. They only have theories, and they battle each other whose is the best theory. And they don't come to any conclusion. They can't say how creation began. No one can say that. They can say it, but then someone will say, no, maybe it's like this. So that no one can say it for sure, this is the actual creation. Right? Because how do you know? How does anyone know? It's all theory, it's all hypothesis, it's all speculation, because no one was around at the beginning of creation. So why will you accept your one over our one? So then they're writing different, different philosophers are writing different treatises and exposés on their particular theory of creation, for instance. But everything. And so they've not come to any conclusion. But with so many different theories, the idea is that we must be getting closer. We're narrowing down the possibilities now. But actually they're expanding the possibilities. It's unlimited. It's also unlimited. Krishna will give intelligence. He'll throw another theory, if they want like that. And then they go on this way forever. They'll never surrender. It's like we heard the story of the other day that can God create a mountain that is so big he can't lift it? Prabhupada said yes. Then he's not God. Then he can't be God. Prabhupada said then he will lift. Then he's not God. Then he can't lift it. Then he's not God. Then he will lift it. So like this, this is how they go on forever and ever. They'll never come to any conclusion. They just go on like that. Krishna will put the hill down and squash them all. They'll never come to any conclusion. That's how they move. They can't come to any conclusion. Huh? We heard that the atheists can never ever disprove there's God. A theist, somehow or other, he may actually find out God. He may actually come to knowing God in truth. Right? He may become self-God realized. There's a chance. But for the atheist, there's no chance of disproving God. But the theist, at least there is a chance that he may actually know God. So there's... But they'll not do that. They'll not surrender, you see. They're not except. It's out of our, it's out of my, well, I can't put it in a box. It's not science. It's unacceptable. It's mythology. But this is what you're, this is what we're living with. Although they will actually pose as religious persons for popularity, and generally, a lot of them. Not the hardcore. Hardcore scientists, maybe, okay, that's, what about this, we're presenting our Vedic version, that's fine. They won't, they're very politically correct, because in one sense, they're in the mode of goodness, these people. It means their lifestyle is very, and they're very reasonable, intelligent people. That's okay. We're not disputing. But right now, our line of thought is like this, this theory. This is a scientific, main scientific stream at the moment, this way. We say, here, look, we have so much evidence here, you know, undisputed evidence, or undisproved evidence for thousands of years. It is solid. It hasn't changed at all. And your theories are changing from time to time. That's okay. But right now, this is where we, this is the way we're going now, so. They won't actually say, they won't actually say, you know, we don't believe it, it's nonsense. It's okay, but right now, this is where the scientific stream is going at the present moment. So, this is the situation in Kali Yuga. Age of disagreement. Nobody can agree on anything. So therefore, so much confusion, and therefore, so much ignorance, and therefore so much suffering. Activities in the mode of ignorance result in suffering. Therefore, you see so much suffering in the world. There's a ignorance. Our leaders are in ignorance of the actual, of the purpose of life. So therefore, you see, it always ends in this. Passion ends in distress, and ignorance ends in suffering. Most of the countries, governments, they run on the mode of passion. It means I am this body. We work hard. We get economically developed. We eradicate the illiteracy, and mainly economic development. Then you eradicate poverty. Then everyone's happy, and everyone's learned, and everyone's happy. This is a mode of passion. But they're not, they're just doing it their own ways. They don't understand that opulence comes from, facility comes from Dharma, Artha comes from Dharma. But they want to separate that. Because they want to be politically correct and pious people, okay, that's, God is one thing, but you know, we'll separate it. We'll manage the country. you preach your religion to the people. We'll run the country. We'll run it how it, you know, we're practical people. We'll run it how we want to run it. Then you carry on with your religion. That's okay. Don't interfere with it. So therefore, because it used to be, the government would be run on religious codes. That is wrong. All the religions started like that, practically speaking. Islam is still the same. This is the same, and Christianity was the same. Then the Pope got too powerful. Then the King said, we'll make a separation now from the church and the state. You do your thing, and we do. So all it actually is, this initially, in the beginnings, it was always like this. So if you separate God from the picture, then who are you going to follow? That means I'm going to follow my idea. Whoever's in power, whatever modes of nature are predominant at that particular time, and then that's how you're going to go. That's how you're going to manage. It's more or less crisis management. According to the modes of nature, you're going to move. So sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good. But that's all that goes on. But it's just a It's just it's a struggle because of the, if we don't know how material nature works, and you try to overcome material nature or control the material nature, you end up with more problems. And therefore you'll have to expand your government departments to deal with these new problems that come up. That's how material nature works. So many problems we have today in the 21st century that we didn't have. There are so many departments to deal with people who have problems which they didn't have in the last century. Right? new diseases, new areas of problems come up because hedonistic way of living and environment things that weren't there before are coming up. And this is a result of trying to interfere with nature, trying to control the nature, and you simply create more problems. And so we practically see this is what is written in the scriptures and spoken by the sages. We see it's actually coming true. Things aren't improving in the world. What's improving in the world? Different methods of sense gratification. So. A little more comfort in some areas. But actually the quality of life is not improving. There's still illiterate people around. Do you think after a couple of hundred years they would have got it together by now? There's still poor people in every city. There's still wars going on all over the place. They can't agree. It's not working. So simply because of this pride, this reluctance to accept the perfect authority, so then we have to make our own authority. And then when you present an authority, oh, this is too far out. This is absurd. How could the person come with eight arms? But for devotees, this is glorious. It's even more wonderful. It makes the Lord even more wonderful that he can appear like this and appear like that for specific purposes. So this actually glorifies the Lord that he can lift a hill on his little finger so many days. Not only that, so many wonderful... He's not straining to hold that hill. There's also so many wonderful pastimes that are going on while he's holding the hill. Right? You can read in the story of Govardhan. It's a party. Everyone's having a great time under that hill. It's not just roots dangling and water dripping through and nothing to eat. It's really opulent down there. Like arrangements of the Lord. There's no suffering whatsoever. they're all having a good time there. But how can these people believe this? It's faith. So they're more different or unusual, uncommon, the Lord's activities, then the more devotees are happy. It's good that the devotees more pleasure. Oh, the Lord is so wonderful. So wonderful he appears like this. And for the envious, they get more and more upset and angry. It's ridiculous. The more the Lord's uncommon pastimes they hear, then the more upset they become. Because I couldn't do that. Right? I couldn't do that. How can he do it? Krishna, how can he tame eight bulls? Huh? Eight very ferocious bulls. Difficult, Abba, yeah? Yes, Krishna has to go in that pen all together and tie it and bind them to win the hand of the princess. He does it very easily, smiling. No, it's not a joke. Eight bulls at once, and that's something we can conceive. You know. So the Lord is wonderful, and he's always wonderful, and he'll always continue to be wonderful for the devotees. And by hearing his wonderful pastimes, we also can know the Lord. Huh? Although we can't perceive, he says he's not perceivable by material senses, we can understand the Lord. He appears to our material senses in the Archivigraha. He appears in his pastimes through his words. We can hear them through the ears. And we can understand the Lord, and we become attracted to the Lord. And if we're fortunate enough to become so attracted, then we can actually perceive. We can take on the same nature as the Lord and actually directly perceive the Lord Himself. Well, that means when the senses become purified, when the senses become the sudasattva. By purified senses, my material senses, he can't be perceived. But we can know him by material senses. We can see his form, we can hear his words, and we can appreciate his uncommon pastimes. But that realization, by doing that, that will actually bring the ability to actually perceive the Lord directly. That is the actual process. Engage in those senses, in the pastimes, qualities, and the form, etc., of the Lord. That is the actual process that we do. So for those faithful persons, then it's so everything is just progressing. And for those who don't have the faith, then they just get down and down, go opposite way. Although they're very proud of their so-called advancement, they can create a very hellish situation. The end of Kali Yuga, there's no fruit, milk, vegetables or sugar, and the people are that big, but they're still very proud. Look what we can eat now. Now we've discovered how we can eat this stuff, but in our laboratory. So the great breakthrough, and everyone, yeah, and they'll get diplomas and their Nobel prizes for how you can eat some untouchable stuff because there's nothing else to eat. So then they'll be glorifying people like that. It won't stop. So, you know, it's funny now, but we're doing exactly the same thing today. Compared with the Satyayuga, they'd be laughing at us, right? And Kali Yuga, they only live for 100 years, and they only grow to 6 feet tall, and the mangoes are only, you can only get up to 1 kilo mango, and it's a joke. So it's all relative, but that, pride in your situation, and then to ignore the past, to not believe the past, it becomes mythology. After a few thousand years, it all becomes mythology. So what we're doing today will be mythology in 5,000 years. They won't believe it. What we can do today, they won't believe in another, practically speaking, 5,000 years. Of course, you're going to go through so many holocausts and the atomic wars and ups and downs in between then, more than likely. But that's how it is. You just come conditioned to your particular environment, this particular time, and anything outside, no. So they don't believe the future, they don't believe the past. How do you know? It says after 3,000 years, these religious figures, prophets, etc., they become mythology by 3,000 years. Mythology, they became fables, and it had a breakdown. However long they've been running, for whoever was 3,000 years ago is a fable now, according to the books. So then the ones that are in the books now, the saints and etc. were in the books now, the prophets, etc., in 3,000 years there'll be also fables. New people will come. But that's how it goes. Kali Yuga, that's how the time progresses. But for the devotees, for those who have faith, then it's only good fortune. The faith gets stronger by hearing of the wonderful, uncommon pastimes of the Lord and seeing His form and hearing His name and engaging in His service and associating with those kind of people. Then you go back to Godhead, you're finished with the material world altogether. But for those who want to try to lord it over, they get chance again and again and again and again. They'll be born back in the material situation to try to prove their point. So in this way, the conditioned soul becomes very foolishly embarrassed by the modes of nature and in its forgetfulness of Krishna. But for the devotees, we like our remembrance of Krishna becomes refreshed by hearing these wonderful activities and extraordinary pastimes and qualities. Sama Bhagavatam ki jai, Sarva Upadhi ki jai, Tai Go Pramanandi Hari Hari. Any questions?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. From the different modes of material nature, can you go straight to transcendence? Or do you have to come to the mode of goodness to go to transcendence?
I can't hear very well.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
From the three different modes of material nature, can you go straight to transcendence from those modes? Or do you have to come up to the mode of goodness before you can go to transcendence?
The three modes include goodness.
Yeah, like, you know,
goodness. You have to come to goodness to transcend. The consciousness, but the activity, say persons acting like different varnas, persons are affected by different modes of nature known by the varnas. So then those who are acting have occupation in passion and ignorance, but if they engage in devotional service to the Lord, the activity is purified, the activity is actually transcendental, although the consciousness may not be. So it's recommended that one does come to a mode of goodness, and one, by following the practice of devotional service like we're doing, this Vaidhi Sarana Bhakti, these activities are all in the mode of goodness. 99%. The whole lifestyle is a mode of goodness. So automatically you're going to develop the mode of goodness. That quality will develop automatically. But by the activity is transcendence. The activity, if we're doing it for Krishna, performing devotional service, that is transcendence. That is the platform of liberation. But the consciousness is not pure. Consciousness is not through the sattva. The consciousness is not liberated. We still think we these bodies, we still think we're the doers and the controllers, but we're doing for Krishna. In spite of everything, we still have the material of being affected by material waves, etc. But still, we know that we're focusing on Krishna. But the consciousness is not completely pure. It's not. We're not doing it out of affection for Krishna, we're doing it out of something else, maybe. But generally you will come to that. That's an automatic thing to come to the mode of goodness. But it's not actually a prerequisite. It's not actually a prerequisite. It's not that we have to come to, we must come to the mode of goodness, otherwise Krishna said all these, they all come back, all my devotees come back to me. And he lists the sujas, vaisha, which means mode of passion, mode of ignorance also. They all come back to me as they surrender unto me. That's because he's a person. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's not looking for qualification. He's not insisting on qualification. So it's even better, especially this particular time in the Sankirtan mission. It's not imperative. So if we have a lot of passion, then we work like that. We serve in passion for Krishna. We use our passion in his service, whatever it is. And that is recognized by the Lord. He sees that. So even though we may not be able to have the ability to actually purify ourselves, to come to living a life in the mode of goodness, but what we've done, we've endeavored to serve the Lord with our contaminated senses, and the Lord is pleased. He's a person, he has his own mind, and by his mercy, then we can go back to Godhead. Prabhupada says, you chant 16 rounds, follow the four Rigveda principles. That means, you know, you're avoiding all those gross things which attract, you know, keep us in the modes of lower modes. By following those principles and chant 16, you can go back to Godhead in one lifetime. Even many times. By his mercy. By his mercy. But to come to the mode of goodness is a feat in itself. To live your life in the mode, it's actually quite an extraordinary feat. Who was saying the other day, I can't remember in the class, that those brahmanas, those born in a brahman family, good they have good karma, good samskaras. they come to the mode of goodness. I'm sorry, it's gone. Someone can remember what that was?
One person is born in the Suci family, one person is born in the Muci family. But they both take the initiation, Panchachiki Diksha, and initiation from bona fide spiritual master, and both get initiated into the holy name. Who reaches the goal first? That one? Who reaches the goal first? And he said, the one who's sincere. It's not a question of your Suci or Asuci, it's the sincerity of the of your service towards Krishna. So it's the speed of the practitioner. So it's not consideration of material qualification.
So faith is a qualification in the Mahaprabhu's mission. I can't remember, I'm sorry, I forgot that example. That's the...
Hare Krishna Prabhu. You were mentioning about having faith in scriptures and in the process. So sometimes we may encounter people who have some faith in some parts of scriptures or Prabhupada's teachings. They accept some of it, and they cannot accept some parts of it. They say, no, this is not practical, or maybe this is for higher level people. We wouldn't even aspire to or endeavor to get there. So then they practice only certain things. So what is the remedy in such situations with such people? How do we relate with them? How do we bring them to accepting everything?
How do you bring them? That's your expertise. If you're an expert preacher, you can convince them of the feasibility of these seemingly impossible or absurd truths. That will be your expertise to do that. Otherwise you have to accept. The bone of an animal is impure, the conch is pure, the stool of stool is impure, stool of an animal is impure, the stool of a cow dung is pure. They're contradictions, so we have to accept. You have to accept the Vedic statement.
Because they're following some part of the devotional process. Maybe they chant a round or two or something like that, but they don't follow so many other things. But are they being offensive by rejecting some of those things and say they're not practical or it's not possible or it's another age?
It's offensive.
So what's the remedy for them, and how can they be saved of this offense and be able to go higher?
Well, what happened to you? What happened to you and me? When we didn't just go overboard and say, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, I accept everything in total. I mean, I can't really imagine what it was like, what I was like before. It's very difficult to imagine how you used to think. But I can remember asking that question here in Mayapur when I was a new bhakta. How can you be sure that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? How can you be so sure? I can remember asking that question. Getting shot down. So, the answer they gave me then didn't convince me that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, 100%. So I just, it must have been over a period of time and association with the process and the devotees that it becomes fixed, becomes established as an irrevocable fact. It's a question of faith. So it goes on all the way, even now. Unless we're pure unalloyed devotees, we still have faith that there's some shelter and happiness in Maya, in the material world. Even though we've heard every day, material life is just a there's no happiness for the soul in the material world. But because of that experience, we're experiencing some pleasure, some relief from the suffering, then we take shelter there. And even today, we go, even though we've heard it 365 times 30 classes, still, we still go back there. There's some happiness, sense of relief. We still go back there. Even today, the mind goes there, right? even though we accept the philosophy, we leave the philosophy, but still, it doesn't. Krishna says you're practicing self-restraint. He said, but you may follow all that, but still the desire hasn't gone away. That doesn't go. So sometimes that desire overtakes you and you go back there. Even though we understand, it's actually illusion. There's no, and it's going to end in, it won't be positive for us. But still we do it anyway. Still we go there. So that's our experience, even now. Otherwise you'll be a pure unalloyed devotee. So that conditional nature is so strong. And that desire to be for happiness and shelter so strong that if we not get this, where the faith is there, we have the faith that the Krishna consciousness will get these things, it is there. But at the same time, we still got one foot in that, or one hand in the material basket. We aren't willing to release that. Difficult. So the faith is not so strong. Even though we by intelligence we're convinced, by practical realization, we're not. Okay. The letter here from the... This letter is from Rasa Priya Gopika Devidasi from Mamanai. The Lord appears among different species, so is that the animals in that time will go back to Godhead directly, or they have to take birth as human beings to get back to Godhead? I can't answer this. I've heard different versions, but I'm afraid to... Someone else may like to answer. It says the Lord appears in every species. Now do those species that have association with the Lord, they go back to Godhead in that lifetime, or do they have to wait for a human birth? Can anyone enlighten us on this subject? I'm sorry, I wouldn't like to say what I'm sorry, Rasa Priya Gopika Devidasi, I cannot answer your question. Sabhavadaki Sambhavadamaki Dai Gopranandi Hare Gopranandi.